This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello. I think this December is one of the best months we've had to observe the heavens for many a long while. Obviously, the nights are long, and that's great. But we have also Jupiter at its best for quite a long time, high in the sky, and a chance to see the Geminid meteors with no moon in the sky as well. So it really is good. If you look up at the western sky soon after sunset, as it gets dark, you see one of the two lovely regions of the constellations in the sky, Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila, with their bright stars Altair, Deneb, and Vega, making up what's called the summer triangle, but still visible late into the autumn. As the night moves on, another wonderful region appears in the eastern sky. The constellation of Taurus the Bull, Orion the Hunter, Gemini, the Heavenly Twins, and Canis Major. In between, we have the square of Pegasus. One good way of judging how dark and transparent the sky is to count the number of stars that you can see within the square. My rather elderly eyes now, I'm afraid, tend to see about 5. We did this test recently at a weekend star party, and the youngest member there, who was just 12, he saw 8 stars. When we're young, our pupils dilate further, up to about 7 millimeters diameter, allowing perhaps twice as much light to pass into our eyes than when we're old, when perhaps they only reach 5 millimeters in diameter. In the night sky page, I give a chart starting from the bright star Alpheratz, the top left-hand star of the square of Pegasus. You can star hop your way to Andromeda. Best look for around the 12th, 13th, 14th or so of the month when it's around new moon. And if it's really transparent, you've got a chance of seeing M33, which is the third largest galaxy in our local group, Andromeda being the first, our Milky Way galaxy the second, and M33 the third. Moving over towards the east, M45, the Pleiades cluster, will be very visible. And below that, between it and the Hyades cluster, will be Jupiter. The bright star there, Aldebaran, is in fact not part of the Hyades cluster, about halfway between ourselves and the cluster. And then rising below that, of course, is Orion the Hunter. With binoculars, have a look below the central star of Orion's belt, and you should see a little fuzzy glow, which is the Orion Nebula, a region of star formation, the nearest we have, in fact, to our sun. As time moves on, Sirius will appear above the eastern horizon. A little bit below it is a very nice star cluster called M41. The majority of the stars are blue, they're hot young blue stars, but there's one red giant in the centre, making a lovely little colour comparison. So there's a lot to see. What about the planets? Well, as I've said, great month to view Jupiter. It rises about sunset at the beginning of December. It reaches opposition, so it'll be visible all night. So it's due south around midnight. We'll see it very well indeed. When it's due south, in the constellation of Taurus the Bull, it will be about 60 degrees above the horizon. So we're not seeing it through too much of our atmosphere. The best for many, many years, in fact. Shining at magnitude -2.8, it starts December, lying just 5 degrees to the upper left of Aldebaran. But during the month, it gradually moves westwards. And so it's a little bit up to the right by the end, towards the lovely little star cluster, the Pleiades. The angular diameter stays pretty constant. It's about 48 arc seconds. And so there's plenty of detail to see with a small telescope. It does depend, though, on how good what is called the seeing is. Sometimes the night is very turbulent, and whatever telescope you have, Jupiter will look rather blurred. But on a really good night, it can look absolutely fantastic. Now, Saturn rises about 4 a.m. as December begins, and by 2:30 by the end of the month. So it's well above the horizon by dawn. Both its magnitude and angular diameter are increasing during the month, from +0.7 to +0.6 magnitudes, and from 15.7 to 16.1 arc seconds. And of course, the lovely ring system extends for about twice that diameter. The really good news is that the rings have now opened out to about 18 to 19 degrees from the line of sight. They're best, in fact, for 6 years. We're now observing the southern hemisphere. In fact, much of the northern hemisphere is hidden behind the rings. Do try and get yourself a small telescope, not just to look at Jupiter, but look at Saturn as well. You should be able to see with a small telescope the gap between the two brightest rings called Cassini's division. And you'll also see some of the brighter of its satellites, such as Titan. Mercury. Well, it reaches greatest western elongation on the 4th of December, when it will be separated by 20 degrees or so from the Sun. It shines at magnitude minus 0.5 throughout the month. On the 4th of December, it rises about 2 hours before the Sun, not far from Venus, in what is in fact an excellent apparition for Northern Hemisphere observers. As it begins, it will be 48% illuminated, having an angular size of about 7.4 arc seconds. While at the end of the month, it's actually got rather smaller in angular size, 4.8 arc seconds, but it'll be 96% illuminated, so still relatively bright. Mars has been around, low in the western sky, for some months now. It's moving eastwards from Sagittarius into Capricornus, visible low in the southwest after sunset, shining at magnitude plus 1.2. The angular size is actually falling. It's about 4.3 down to 4.2 arc seconds. So honestly, you're not going to see any details on its salmon pink surface. But nevertheless, it is there to see if you wish. And finally, Venus. It's now getting closer to the Sun, but at magnitude minus 4, it's still easily visible in the pre-dawn sky, though it's now somewhat closer to the horizon than it was last month. As dawn breaks, it will start the month with an elevation of about 17 degrees, but that will drop to about 10 degrees by month's end. At the same time, the angular size is dropping somewhat from 11.6 down to 10.9 arc seconds, but at the same time, the percentage of the surface illuminated increases from 88 to 94%. And the result is that these effects compensate each other, and the brightness remains absolutely constant at minus 4 magnitudes. Well, what about the highlights of the month? Well, I've already mentioned that Jupiter is at its best for absolutely ages. It's looking somewhat different than it has done in the last few years. The North Equatorial Belt has become quite broad. The Great Red Spot is currently a pale shade of pink, but easily seen as a large feature in the South Equatorial Belt. And on the night sky page, I've given a list of the times in the evening when the red spot is roughly facing us on the meridian towards us, a good chance, therefore, to see it. On December the 3rd, if you don't mind waking up till around midnight or so, you can actually see the moon occulting an open cluster. It's M27. It's in the constellation of Cancer. At about 10:45, the moon's western, that's the bright limb, will begin to occult the stars of the cluster. Those first stars will then reappear beyond the dark limb. That's actually when it's rather nice to see them, just popping into view at about 1 o'clock next morning. Now, as the moon's not very far away, we have parallax effects, and that means the precise times when these occultations occur depend upon where you live in the UK or elsewhere. On December the 10th and 11th, again 1 hour before dawn, we have Saturn, Venus and Mercury again, but this time they're joined with a thin, waning crescent moon. And now a second major highlight for this month. On December the 14th and 15th, after midnight, we have a wonderful opportunity, if it's clear, let's hope so, to observe the Geminid meteor shower. The great thing is those dates correspond to new moon, so there'll be no light from the moon in the sky to hinder our view. Really, you want to get away, well away from towns and cities, and that helps quite a bit because the sky will be darker. The relatively slow meteors that we might see arise from debris released from the asteroid 3200 Phaeton. Actually unusual, as most meteor showers come from comets, And as it implies from the name the Geminids, the radiant, which is where the meteors appear to come from, is close to the bright star Castor in the constellation of Gemini. And again, there's a star chart to show you on the night sky page. If it's clear, it's going to be cold. So don't forget to wrap up well, wear a woolly hat, and have some nice hot drinks with you. In fact, the other day I bought myself some fur-lined boots just to help that sort of thing. There's another meteor shower, perhaps not quite so well known. It's called the Ursids, which implies it comes from Ursa Major. In fact, to be honest, the radiant is very close to the star Kokab in Ursa Minor. The rate isn't very high, 10 to 15 meteors per hour at best, but sometimes you actually get a higher rate, so it might be worth having a look. Best perhaps after 2 to 3 o'clock, because around that time in the morning, the moon is going to be setting down in the west, so it won't really hurt our view. So that's the Geminids and then the Ursids. I've shown you that, in fact, there's a chart to show you how to find the Andromeda Galaxy and M33 in Triangulum, I've mentioned before. On 10 to the 15th, again, around New Moon, have a look for Neptune. A star chart is given for that. It's at a magnitude of about 7.8. So, in fact, binoculars will pick it out. The trouble is, it's important to know that you're seeing it. Perhaps have a look for a few days and you might just spot a very tiny motion. It's very close to the star Iota Aquarii in Aquarius. And that's slightly upwards from the star Delta Capricorni. Finally, if you're compass mentist after sunset on Christmas Day, Jupiter is joined by a moon just 3 days before full. And that, of course, you'll see in the eastern sky as Jupiter's rising. If you're lucky, you might just spot Father Christmas on his way home. Well, they all say it's to the North Pole. I don't believe that. I've actually seen him in Lapland. That's where I think he's going. So I've also put Father Christmas on the star chart. Anyway, it's a lovely month to observe the heavens. Lots of dark skies. Let's hope we get some clear skies as well. Good hunting.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now, here is John Field telling us what you can see in the southern night sky in December.
Kia ora, and welcome to the December Jodcast, coming to you from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. Our evening sky is dominated in the north by the constellations of Taurus, Orion, and his two hunting dogs, Canis Major and Canis Minor. The summer Milky Way stretches through these constellations and along our southern horizon. Although not as bright as our winter Milky Way, it still exhibits the mottled glow of bright and dark regions. The bright regions are the combined light of many of the distant stars that form our galaxy. The dark patches are the clouds of interstellar gas and dust that block the light of the more distant stars. This month we will tour some of the most famous nebulae in our sky. Our starting point is in the north of Orion's Belt. This easily seen line of three stars is formed by three blue supergiant stars ranging in distance from 700 to 1,300 light years from us. Alnitak, the easternmost star, is a double star system that can be a challenge to split in small telescopes. There has been a lot of discussion as to what colours the two stars appear as when seen in a telescope. Why not observe this star and know what colour they appear to you? The ultraviolet radiation from this star is illuminating a cloud of dust and gas, creating NGC 2024, the Flame Nebula. Also nearby is IC434, that includes the famous Horsehead Nebula. Both of these features are challenging to observe in telescopes due to the brilliance of Alnitak, but both show up well in long exposure photographs. Above Orion's Belt, for us Southern Hemisphere observers, there is a fainter second line of stars called the Sword of Orion. The middle star of this line appears as a hazy cloud called the Great Nebula. Sitting about 1,000 light years away, it is part of a much larger dark cloud of interstellar material. The nebula is being lit up by newly formed stars that have created a hole in the cloud's edge due to their strong stellar winds and intense radiation. Binoculars and telescopes reveal more detail, and long exposure photographs will reveal a range of colours. This nebula is not as large or bright as the Carina Nebula that sits between the Fox and Southern Crosses. Below the belt is Betelgeuse, marking one of the shoulders of the Hunter. With a distinct red glow, this red giant is a variable star ranging in brightness from 0.2 to 1.2 over a period of about 6 years. There are also a number of other cycles ranging from 150 to 300 days, which keeps astrophysicists on their toes trying to explain them all. Above the belt is the bright star Rigel, marking one of Orion's feet. This blue-white giant star is about 900 light-years away and is a companion star that can be seen in medium-sized telescopes. The head of Taurus sits to the left of Orion and forms a distinct V in the evening sky. Sitting about halfway between the horns and the head is the planet Jupiter. Appearing as a bright star, Jupiter has been slowly moving through this constellation over the last few months. It will be at opposition on the 3rd of December, and Jupiter will be at its brightest during December. Just before Christmas Day, the Moon moves through Taurus and past the Pleiades, and soon after, Aldebaran and Jupiter. Uranus and Neptune are in our evening sky and can be found in Pisces and Aquarius, respectively. Crux, the Southern Cross, is low in the southeastern sky, and an obvious dark cloud sits beside it. Called the Coalsack Nebula, it is about 600 light-years away. Although dark and visible light, infrared telescopes reveal large numbers of hot spots. This is where gravity and other dynamic pressures have caused the internal sections of the cloud to collapse and form stars. The light from the stars is absorbed by the cloud and re-emitted at infrared wavelengths. Eventually, the strong stellar winds from the newly formed stars inside the cloud will break up the cloud, revealing the stars. This is what has occurred in the Orion Nebula. The Jewel Box Cluster and the Pleiades are examples where the clouds have been fully dispersed and only the stars can be seen. There is another type of object visible as a cloud in our evening sky. Rather than a cloud of material belonging to our galaxy, the Large Magellanic Cloud is a massive satellite galaxy of our own Milky Way at about 200,000 light-years away. This object is a great target for binoculars and small telescopes with many faint star clusters and nebulae to discover. Not far from the large cloud is the Small Magellanic Cloud, and near to this is the bright globular cluster 47 Tucanae. Visible as a hazy star next to the SMC, binoculars reveal it as a golf ball shape of stars that brighten to a brilliant core. A second fainter globular cluster can be found using small telescopes close to the SMC, called NGC-362. It is nice to compare it with 47 Tucanae. We have two meteor showers happening during December. On the 6th of December, the Phoenicids reach their peak. With a rating within the constellation of Phoenix, not far from Achenar, this shower produces a few meters per hour, but occasionally a higher rate may be seen. With this constellation high above our horizon, it is well placed for observing. The other meteor shower, peaking on the 14th, is the Geminids. This is one of the best showers of the year, but we are not well placed for viewing it in New Zealand. The radiant in Gemini below and near the star Castor rises about 3 a.m. in the morning, New Zealand daylight time. Due to its low height, we may only see about 50% of the meteors compared to those in the northern hemisphere. This shower will still produce a number of bright meteors, and with the peak being one day from new moon, it is well worth viewing. Due to the extended nature of this shower, viewing for a week either side of the state is worthwhile. December the 21st marks the summer solstice in the southern hemisphere, marking the time of our longest daylight hours and our shortest nighttime hours. And all going to plan, the world will not end on this date. And talking of the sun, the expected increase in solar activity as we head towards solar maximum has taken a nosedive. The number of spots and overall activity has decreased. This current cycle is throwing up many surprises, and this cycle may be the weakest for over 40 years. This decrease in activity was not predicted, and we still hope that activity may increase between now and expected maximum in February to May of next year. During March of 2013, we will hopefully have a bright comet gracing our skies. C2011L4 Pan-STARRS is a comet that may reach a brightness of up to magnitude minus 4. Comets, though, are notorious for underperforming, and we will not know how bright this comet will be until it passes the Sun in March. The northern hemisphere may get the best view of the comet after its closest approach to the Sun in March, and it will be low in the west after sunset. It has been a pleasure bringing you the night sky in 2012, and the team here at Card Observatory wish you clear skies, and we look forward to another year of stargazing in 2013.